This is ACC Nation. I'm Jim Quist. That's Will Ogenen. And we're joined by our special guest, Rick Bosens. And thank you, Rick, for joining us. We're going to go through a lot of stuff tonight, and it's not all sports-oriented.
Oh, boy.
Just to give you a fair warning. And we were just talking about this off air, about you being from Gary, Indiana. So let's start in Gary, Indiana, and you're wanting to be a pro sports player. So what took you down the path of going to Indiana and becoming a sports journalist?
Well, that's a great question. Thanks for having me on. I grew up, my dad, all my uncles, my grandparents were all steel workers. Mm-hmm. Either U.S. Steel, which for a while was the largest steel plant in the world, there on the banks of Lake Michigan. And my dad worked at Inland Steel in East Chicago. And my mom, bless her heart and to her credit, didn't want me to have to work that hard and be in some of the danger that is inherent in the steel mill. And she pushed from the time I was little that I was going to go to college. And so that was the beginning of it. And then secondly, is I always loved sports. I had an uncle who played football at Notre Dame, who would take me to games and stuff like that. And my dad was a big sports fan, especially baseball. And I wasn't good enough to be a college athlete, but I was one of my best subjects in high school was English. And so I decided it'd be fun to be a sports writer. And when I was a kid, actually, I subscribed to Sporting News and Sports Illustrated, and I wrote a letter to the editor of the Sporting News once, and it got published. And that, like, wow, yeah. My name in the newspaper. That was back when the Sporting News was a really big deal.
Right.
It came out every week, and it had the baseball box scores in it every week, like for the whole week. Yeah. And that was a really big deal. And so it just went from there. And as for I went to IU, to be honest with you, there were four in-state schools in Indiana. Indiana, Purdue, Indiana State and Ball State. And my mom and dad basically said, you're going to have to go to one of the in-state schools because of the cost. And I picked Indiana. And I had no idea that the journalism school there was better than the others, although Mike Lopresti would argue, the former USA Today columnist, against me because he's a Ball State guy. But I was just fortunate going to IU, and they had a really good journalism school.
Very interesting. So, I'm assuming that because you're a White Sox fan, it's because you lived in Gary. Mm-hmm. So this is where Will and I diverge a little bit.
I'm not a Cubs fan.
Unfortunately, I am. But oh boy. But here's what I was going to go to the next level. We're talking about pro football. Did that carry over from Chicago to you, or did you go a different route with football, or football is pro football is not of interest?
No, I was a Bears fan. When I was a kid in the 60s, that was Butkus and Sayers.
Yeah.
And the Bears were good. They just were never good enough to beat the Packers, as pretty much been the case my whole life. Whether Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers has kept that up now for the last 30 years. But I was a Bears fan. I was a Bulls fan when they first started in 67 or 68. I like to tell the story in 1971, they played the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. And to tell you what a different world it was back then, some of my friends and I walked up to the ticket window the evening of the game and bought tickets for the Lakers-Bulls game, because wow, the Bulls weren't selling out back then. This is the Western Conference Finals. I think it was like game four, might have been game six even. I don't remember which one it was. But, you know, that was like, pretty sure like Chamberlain was on the Lakers back then, and Jerry West and those guys, and it wasn't as big a deal. So, yeah, it was the Bulls. The Blackhawks were good then. They had Bobby Hull and Stan Mikita, and Tony Esposito was the goalie. And, you know, I followed all the teams. And in the Chicago area, you grew up a Big Ten fan and Notre Dame. That's pretty much who you get on television. So I was a big fan. My dad's the one who got me into college. My dad was a big college basketball fan. And I became a college basketball fan, and really as a kid.
I want to ask you who your favorite college teams are.
I grew up a Notre Dame fan because my uncle played football there. Oh, and he would let me go to a game, one game a year, always the worst game. But when you're a kid, any game's a big game, especially when you go to a place like Notre Dame. And I think I went to like a Notre Dame Michigan State game. I went to a Notre Dame Georgia Tech game. And so we would go there and walk around the campus. And I grew up a Notre Dame fan.
Yeah, neat stuff, man. I mean, that's a memory. I can see why you've gone the direction that you have, and you're in a perfect location geographically still to sort of indulge yourself with a lot of the sports that you have in your backyard, Indiana being close, Notre Dame right up the road, et cetera. Let me talk a little bit about your journey in newspaper and where you started and how that progression to Louisville came about.
Well, I started actually on the Indiana Daily Student when Coach Knight was the coach, and he actually let the student newspaper travel with the team. Wow. It's several war stories with him. I almost got left in Iowa once because I was late to a bus. And the bus was pulling away from the parking lot in Iowa City. And I had a good reason. I was just trying to get an extra score so I could come on the bus and tell the team, the coaching staff, the score of a Purdue game. And this is back in the day when only the Big Ten champion went to the NCAA tournament, so it was a meaningful game. But the bus started pulling away from the parking lot, and I was waving my arms, and some of the players saw it, and they stopped the bus, and I ran up to the bus and knocked on the door, and Coach Knight was sitting in the front seat and kind of shook his head, and the bus pulled up like another 40 yards and then finally stopped. The door opened, and I started to get, I got on and said, he said, "Where the hell have you been?" And I started to answer, and before I could get like two words out, he goes, "I don't care. Get your blank in the back of the bus and don't ever be late again." And the players just roared in approval because now somebody else was getting their rear end chewed. But that's where I worked at the beginning. And then I started in Anderson, Indiana, which is about 45 miles northeast of Indianapolis, covering high school sports. It was a two-man sports staff. The other guy was actually, I don't know how much of an NFL fan you are, was Mike Chappell, who was a longtime Colts beat writer for the Indianapolis Star. He and I covered high school games on Friday nights and college games on Saturdays. We edited stories. We wrote captions for pictures. We put the paper out 6 days a week. After being there for a year and a half, I moved back to Bloomington to work for the Bloomington paper. I actually was a city hall reporter for a while. And I did that for a year and a half. And then I came to the Courier-Journal in 78 as a copy editor, editing other people's stories. Did that for about a year. Then I was the high school writer at the Louisville Times for a year. Then I was the University of Kentucky beat writer for the Louisville Times, which is an afternoon paper, for a year. And then in 1981, Dick Fenlon, who was a really good columnist at the Louisville Times, left for a job at his hometown of Columbus, Ohio. And I was fortunate that I got promoted to sports columnist. I was with the Times for 5 years. And then in 1986, Gannett bought the Louisville papers from the Bingham family, and they merged the Times and the Courier, and I started writing a column for the Courier and did that from 86 until 2012. And then Eric Crawford, my good friend, and I left the Courier-Journal, and we went to work for WDRB, which is a television station in Louisville. We're on the air four nights a week, but we write for the website, WDRB.com. So that's a long-winded version, except for the 2 days, as I was telling Will, in 1986, I took the job as the sports columnist at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. I left Louisville on Halloween weekend. It was 72 degrees, and when I got to the Twin Cities on Halloween night, it was 29, and I decided, I'm not sure I want to do this. I haven't grown up in Gary with cold weather.
Smart guy.
Although Patrick Royce, you know Patrick Royce.
Yep, Royce, yep.
I went. On a Saturday night, I went to a Gophers Michigan State game. They had Lorenzo White. Remember him? A really good running back. Mm. And they put me next to Sid Hartman.
Oh,
legendary Sid Hartman.
The legend.
And when I decided to come back home, Patrick Royce for years told the story that one night next to Sid Hartman convinced me to go back to Louisville.
Yeah, that certainly sounds like something Sid Hartman or Hartman would do. Oh, man. I know in his passing recently, hearing a lot of great stories about him and the things he did, and that definitely sounds like something that was right up his alley. But yeah, it's been a great career, I would say, for you, Rick, and obviously you're still going and still obviously have a passion for it.
Yeah, I'm very blessed. I made a decision, fairly early in my career, and definitely after the Minneapolis thing went on, that what I really cared about was I really liked college sports, and I really liked college basketball. And other than the research triangle, this is the best place in the country, because although you have great ACC basketball in Carolina, here I've got Louisville, which has been in the Metro and then Big East and then that one American Athletic Conference, and now they're in the ACC. I've had Kentucky, where I get a chance to see all the really good SEC teams. I've got Indiana, an hour and 45 minutes away, Big Ten. I've got Western Kentucky down the road. Cincinnati's not far away. This is a great place for college basketball. You get a regular exposure to three top conferences and three programs that every year rank the top 10 in attendance. People care about college basketball here. And since that's what I care about, this made more sense for me than really going to a town that had a heavy pro sports emphasis.
So we'll get into football in a minute, but while we're on the subject of college basketball, so just to kind of get your overall thoughts on the job Chris Mack has done his first couple of years. I thought this team was going to be a little bit better a couple of years ago, but we never got to really fully see what it could do because of the pandemic wiping out the NCAA tournament. And I kind of like to throw away last year because, fan attendance wasn't what it'd be. And I feel like a place like the Yum Center, that it's, that's one of those venues where the home crowd really has an effect on the opposing team. Just to kind of give you an overall effect of what Chris Mack has done so far.
I think he's done a good job, not a great job. The first year, they were solid. They kind of faded late down in the stretch and then got beat pretty decisively by Minnesota in the NCAA tournament. His second team was probably his best team with Jordan Wara and some of the other older guys that were on that team. They were highly ranked for a good chunk of that year. And then again, didn't finish out strongly, and then obviously no NCAA tournament, so we don't know what they would have done. And last year was very uneven. They finished 13-7. They finally beat Kentucky, which has been tough for Louisville to do since John Calipari's been at UK. But they had issues with COVID, and they had a number of strange. They got beat by Wisconsin by like 38. They got beat by Carolina by like 45. They went to the ACC tournament to play Duke and really for them a play-in game to kind of get in the NCAA tournament and didn't win. And so there's a lot of disappointment, I think, from the fan base after that game. And after it was over, he's made some major changes with the team and is seven new guys for next year and two new assistant coaches.
What does it mean to have a guy like Malik Williams back as sort of a the college version of a veteran presence?
Yeah, he's definitely the leader of the team. He'd be a fifth-year senior, which is – we don't see many of those anymore. He's unfortunately for him had struggles staying healthy. I mean, the last 2 years he's had foot problems. I think he's the key to next season if he can stay healthy. He's a really good defensive player and a really good rebounder. He doesn't score as much as a lot of inside guys, but I think he's a key guy for their hopes in 21 and 22. He's the last holdover too from the Rick Pitino era.
Wow. And one more player I want to get your thoughts on, Samuel Williamson. I feel like this guy, I feel like he runs a little hot and cold, but when mm-hmm. he's hot, he can play with the best of them in this league.
Yeah. Samuel Williamson has been a bit of an enigma. He started some games as a freshman. He started most games last year, but did get benched. He's the only guy on the team who's a former McDonald's All-American, so he's super talented. Could have gone to a lot of different schools. He came on pretty much at the end of last year after the benching. I think it did affect him. I think in some ways he's really intelligent kid. He's a very good interview. I think sometimes he's a little hard on himself. I think if they can just get him to relax a little bit and have some success, he can still be a really good player.
Let's do a little hindsight is 2020 action here. I'll throw out two names. Now that you've had plenty of time to digest and sort of let it stew, some thoughts. Patino, Petrino.
Wow, this is going to be a 3-hour podcast. Rick Patino, my background with him goes back to Kentucky, 1989, when they couldn't get several of their top candidates to come take the job. Kentucky obviously was headed towards NCAA probation. They finally talked him into it. CM Newton did. And the job he did at Kentucky, in my opinion, is the best coaching job I've ever seen in college basketball. I mean, the first 2 years when they had no players, I mean, they still never had a losing season. Like the first year they were 500, and the next year they might have had the best record in the regular season in the SEC, even though he took a bunch of guys like Pelfrey and Sean Woods and Feldhaus and Farmer. And then the next year they added Mashburn and played that great game against Duke. And then the next year they went to the Final Four. And then, you know, his last 3 years that he was there, well, yeah, I think, yeah, no, not 95. 95 they got beat in the Elite Eight by Carolina, I think. But 96 and 97 won the championship and easily could have won it in 97 when they lost in overtime to Arizona. So what he did at UK is unmatched. And then at Louisville, he came in and took over a program that was sort of going backwards under Denny Crum. Denny Crum kind of lost his fastball, and he got him in the Final Four in 4 years, 2005, and got him going again. And then, you know, it was just scandal after scandal after scandal. And I know that Rick has maintained that he didn't break any rules, and he made bad hires, and it was assistant coaches, and he's admitted sometimes that the buck still stops with him because they were his guys and it was his program. And it's just unfortunate because if you look at his basketball record, it's hard to criticize him. But when you look at the way he handled things, it definitely tars his legacy. When he finally steps down, that'll be in the first paragraph that Rick Pitino, Hall of Fame coach, who was the only coach to have his team's NCAA title vacated, blah, blah, blah. That'll be the end of his legacy. But I'll say this, he's at Iona now. I wouldn't be surprised to see Iona make a Sweet 16 in the next couple of years. I mean, Pitino is driven to prove people wrong that he still can do it. He's 68, he'll be 69 in September. So he's going to be there and make a run the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, he's a young guy.
Bobby Petrino, much different person. Rick Pitino, could be charismatic. He could be interesting. He could be dynamic. Bobby Petrino is just a strange dude. And he left here, I don't think he had any friends. It was almost like his last season, which was 2018, he wanted to be fired. And when he started here, you know, he was assistant coach under John L. Smith, and he was known as being this cutting edge offensive guru. But he showed early on when he tried to skip out and get the Auburn job away from Tommy Tuberville. And then he skipped out on Louisville after, went to the Falcons, and he skipped out on the Falcons. Just not a lot of character there. And the players at Louisville who he left behind the second time, really, I don't think they really ever had much of a relationship with him. He's now at where Southwest Missouri, I think it is. And he took his team to the playoffs last year. So he's been humbled pretty significantly. I mean, that's high school crowds he's playing in front of now. But, and I don't, at the end of his, the thing of Patino, I think, still has it as a coach. Petrino, his last run at Louisville, he didn't look like he had it anymore. He couldn't get players to respond. I don't know. He's just a different kind of dude.
Well, let's wash away that those two totally different tastes in the mouth there with something different here. You just spoke with Phil Steele for the WDRB Sports Podcast recently, and I'm sure you've spoken with Phil for years about football, and I'm going to encourage everyone to check out the WDRB Sports Podcast for the entirety of this interview because it's interesting. But if you can, some of the words of wisdom from Steele and some of the maybe a question that you asked of him in regard to ACC football that people may find interesting.
We mainly talked about the ACC Atlantic because that's the division that Louisville's in. And he basically said what everybody says is that, you know, Clemson is 30 yards down the field from everybody else and Syracuse is 30 yards behind everybody else. And then you got the five teams that are fairly close. I think he feels like NC State is probably the second best team in the division. And then maybe Wake. He was a little bit less optimistic about Florida State than some people are. And I think he had Boston College fourth. I think he had Florida State and Louisville tied for fifth. I think he's higher on Louisville than a lot of people are. And that's from this standpoint of looking at the numbers of they had a positive run yardage. I'm thinking baseball. I just watched the White Sox game, not run differential, yardage differential. But just were really self-destructive with turnovers last year. And so I think he thinks Louisville is a bit of a bounce back candidate, but that was my sense that he sees a league that's got a clear number one team, a clear bottom feeder, and the other five, it's going to be who can stay healthy, who can develop younger players the best, which team can, just be more positive this year.
I was surprised when I was looking at, and I've got some of his report up on my screen at the moment that I'm referring to, that in the ACC, he had, in both divisions, he had multiple teams all tied right there in the middle. And I was surprised a little bit about that. I can see one or two teams tied, but as many teams as he had tied in both divisions. What are your thoughts on that? Does that strike you as a little unusual?
Yeah, a little bit. It's not what you see in some of the other magazines. I think it's symptomatic of, I don't hate to put words in his mouth, but he doesn't really seem to be overly dazzled by the ACC. If you look at his national rankings, Clemson's really high. And then the next highest team might be Miami, which is not in the top. No, Carolina might be 12. And then Miami might be high teens. And then there's nobody else to the 30s. And once you get, once you get in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, I think all those teams are fairly close. It's not like there's a lot of separation in the league. I think he feels like Clemson's really good. North Carolina and Miami have a chance to be good. And everybody else kind of get to show me how good you are.
All right, Will, take it off and let's take a look at football here with Rick and see what his thoughts are on this upcoming season.
All right. So one of the things you talked about a moment ago was the turnovers for Louisville. And what obviously a lot of that had to do with Malik Cunningham and he was a lot of the reason for the turnovers. That really isn't a thing. He was a lot better a couple of years ago holding onto the football. What changed? Was it just simply lapses in judgment or what?
I think more lapses in concentration.
Or concentration.
And really understanding, how important possession is. I mean, the thing that was unsettling about Malik Cunningham last year wasn't just interceptions, it was fumbles. He was turning the ball over both ways. Georgia Tech game, they definitely lost because of turnovers. They turned it over three or four times. Just carelessness with the ball, not exposing it, not tucking it in. Sometimes as a veteran player, just take your 3 yards and go down instead of trying to wiggle loose for six or seven and then being exposing the ball and losing it. Hopefully he'll learn from that. Cause I know a year ago when I was sizing up the ACC, I was fairly convinced that Malik Cunningham was the third best quarterback in the league after Trevor Lawrence and Sam Howell. And he went backwards last year. And I guess what's unsettling about it is he went backwards with some good weapons around him. I mean, he had Hawkins, who was a good back. He had Atwell and Fitzpatrick, who were both taken in the NFL draft, 2-2 in the second round by the Rams and Fitzpatrick in the fourth round by the Titans. So he was surrounded by some pretty good talent, but just carelessness, lack of concentration, and trying to do too much. So I think that he'll get a chance to clean it up this year. And it'd be, this is just me, Coach Bosich talking, but if it happens again, I mean, I think you have to make a change. And the difficult part for Louisville will be is, I mean, the backup is Evan Conley, who's a nice player, but he's not really a top of the line. It doesn't seem to be a top of the line ACC type player. And they had some issues at quarterback. Jordan Travis was here. He left. He's at Florida State. He's the starter. Chubba Purdy, they had committed until signing day, and he flipped to Florida State. T. Webb came in here, didn't get to play. He left and went to Southern Miss. They recruited McCaffrey from Nebraska. He came here and stayed 4 days and left. So that's four guys that in some ways would be here that aren't here. And so that's my biggest question about Louisville. If Cunningham doesn't get it going, it's not like they have a premier option to replace him. And if he gets hurt, that's even worse.
So you mentioned Javion Hawkins, and he was a really good, sure-handed running back. I think he only fumbled maybe a couple once or twice in his career, I believe. But he's gone now. But in steps, Jalen Mitchell, who he came in, he played very well in the season finale against Wake Forest, ran for 148 yards. But he's a little bit of a more different back than Hawkins is, isn't he?
Yeah, Hawkins was small, very nimble, and very fast. This guy's a little bit more powerful. And I think he'll actually split time with Hassan Hall. Hassan Hall was more highly rated, I think, coming out of high school. And just he kind of got – a lot of people thought he was going to be the starter of the year that Hawkins won the job. He's a bigger back. He's mainly been relegated to a lot of return work since then. But he had a good spring. So I think that Scott Satterfield will use those two guys this year and sort of share the load.
Another position, obviously wide receiver, both Des Fitzpatrick and Tutu Atwell are gone, as you mentioned a moment ago. So there's a lot of inexperience there, a wide receiver. And I know there was a post that went up on WDRB.com today about Tyler Harrell, somebody who's just incredibly fast but has not had the opportunity to play because of everyone in front of him. But just kind of assess the wide receiver situation if you believe Harrell has an opportunity to play.
Scott Satterfield has been effusive and consistent in his praise of Tyler Harrell, but you know, just looking objectively at his career, I tapped the brakes a little bit on that because he's been here 3 years and he's caught two passes. You know, and we all know, I mean, college football, if you can produce, they'll get you on the field. And he didn't even get in any games last year, none. The year before is the year he redshirted. So maybe a switch has been flipped and he's actually going to be productive. But actually, Des Fitzpatrick has a younger brother who's here, who I think he'll end up being a good player. And Marshawn Ford, who's sort of a hybrid tight ends guy, H-back type guy, is a guy they're taking to ACC Media Day in Charlotte. And I think he'll probably be the go-to receiver. So that'd be my – it's a room of everybody's going to get a chance. And I think that, you know, there'll probably be somebody emerge who I'm not even talking about yet.
Given the veteran experience on the offensive line, the fact that there is that inexperience of wide receiver, and obviously Malik Cunningham's a good running quarterback. And Louisville ran it, I think, something about 58% of the time last season. Do you expect them to be pretty heavily reliant on the run game, especially early in the season?
Yeah, I do. For the reasons that you just shared. And also this year, former offensive coordinator Dwayne Ledford is gone. He's now with the Atlanta Falcons, actually, as the offensive line coach. Scott Satterfield himself is going to call plays. And I think he's mentioned on many occasions that he's comfortable with that kind of game. And I think with that being the strength of their team, with the issues they had last year with interceptions, I think that, you know, that'll be close to the percentage again. I think he likes to run the football. He likes to be in control of the clock. And I that's the kind of Louisville offense I think we're going to see this year.
Let's talk about the guys who make things happen on the line. We'll look at the offensive line and the defensive line back-to-back here. Four starters, a transfer on the offensive line. It actually feels good. It looks good on paper, but there is maybe a question mark hovering above the offensive line. I know in the past, in the last couple of years, a couple of years ago, things were a little sketchy on the line. They have improved over the last year or two. How about this year?
Yeah, I think it's the question is because Ledford's gone, and Ledford was considered a very good offensive line coach. You know, how will it be this year without Ledford? But you're right, they do have some. Cole Bentley, I think, is a really good player on the offensive line. He's been around. He's a veteran. I can't remember the name of the kid. They got a kid who transferred in from Virginia Tech, who's actually, I think, from Kentucky, who's been highly touted as somebody who'll give them a veteran presence on the line. They don't have somebody like Mekhi Becton, who they had 2 years ago, who was just a punishing left tackle who was good run blocking or pass blocking. But I think they finally have some experience and some depth. That's looking at Louisville over the last few years of Petrino. That was the biggest recruiting void he had. That was 1 year he didn't even recruit any offensive linemen. He left them in a bad situation, and Satterfield has had to rebuild and fix that thing over a couple of years. And, you know, two years ago, they were starting like a walk on it, right tackle, Tyler Haycraft.
Right.
So it's a situation where they finally have a little bit more experience depth. I think the offensive line, I don't think it'll be great, but I think it'll be very solid and workmanlike.
Functional. Mm-hmm. And that's all that matters. The defensive line, a little bit of movement, but it seems like it may be improved. Is that stretching it too far?
Yeah, I think there's some faith in Abdullah and some of the guys on the defensive line. Yaya Diaby, who had a decent year last year. They've got some talent. I think their talent on defense is more in the front seven. They had some pretty heavy losses in the secondary. Guys whose eligibility is up, and then you had Russ Yeast transfer to Kansas State. So yeah, I think the front seven will be the strength of the defense. And the defense actually made a big improvement. Louisville had been bad on defense for 3 or 4 years in a row. I think they changed coordinators 3 or 4 straight seasons, and now, you know, Brown is there, who's been there all along. So they finally have some continuity on defense. And that's been a big plus, because Petrino could never keep a defensive coordinator. They had Grantham, who left, and then he brought in Peter Sermon from Mississippi State and got rid of him after a year. And then they brought in Brian Van Gorder, who'd been fired at Notre Dame, and he was there for 1 year. So they went four. They had 4 defensive coordinators in 4 years. Man. So those days are over. They've at least got a group of guys who understand what the plan is.
Continuity, key. Defensive backs, and you're talking about some of that front seven. Let's get back into the cornerbacks and the safeties. Again, some shifting there. Maybe some transfers that will make a difference, but that's probably the one area that I look at and I go, Rick, that worries me a little bit. But it has potential.
Yeah, I mean, they got a couple of really nice pieces back there. I read, I think, on Pro Football Focus in the rankings of the top. It was either there or College Football Weekly. I can't remember. I've looked at so many publications preseason. But Ketrell Clark, the transfer from Liberty, is really considered one of the top maybe 15 defensive players mm-hmm. in the ACC at cornerback. He is a good player. He came in last year and started and asserted himself as a player right off the bat. And they've gone back to the transfer market and brought in a kid by the name of, I think it's Kenderick Duncan, who comes in from, I believe, Georgia Southern. I can't remember all the schools exactly some of the times, but he's highly touted. Scott Satterfield has talked him up. He was very productive. And I've heard that, you know, those two guys will be the leaders of the secondary.
So the Louisville schedule, I would say, I think it's a little tough out of the gate, opening up Labor Day night against Ole Miss, and we'll see what they are. They obviously lost some good players on offense, and, you know, Lane Kiffin does have a good offensive mind, but, you know, that I think that's going to be a pretty good game. But Central Florida is going to be a tough game, even though that game is at home. At Florida State is definitely winnable, because I think Florida State has I think there's a lot of questions on that team. And then at Wake, who is one of the most, you know, experienced teams in the league, and the yearly rivalry, Virginia, which is, you know, Virginia's a good team. I think they're going to be good. So what would, given all that, plus obviously they play Clemson this year, so what would you consider a successful season record wise?
What I would consider successful, or what fans would consider successful?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we'll just say, what does Rick Bozich think a success?
You know, I try and be a realist. I think 6-6 would be solid. I don't know if I'd consider it successful, but I'd say solid or understandable. 7 would probably be successful. I'd say 6-6. Anything less than 6-6 would be considered unsuccessful. But I think fans probably set the minimum at 7. I agree. And the first game is Ole Miss, and they'll probably be an underdog. Ole Miss has Matt Corral back at quarterback. That's a pretty tough test out of the blocks. I know that Ole Miss did lose a bunch of guys. They had some guys transferred out. I think their top linebacker transferred to Kentucky. One of their top defensive linemen transferred to Indiana. They've taken some hits. And then it's what, Eastern Kentucky at home? Is that right?
Yes.
And then the third game to me is a key game. You get Central Florida, but it's at home. That's Malzahn now, right?
Yes.
So, you know, Central Florida has been good. When we think of Central Florida now, I think we think back to how good they were under Frost. Heupel had them okay, but didn't their quarterback leave and go to Florida State? So I'm not really sure how good Central Florida is. That, with that game being here, that's a game they need to win. I think if they're going to have a 7-win season, they got to win that game. And then you mentioned, then you get into the SEC. The swing games are obviously, it's at Florida State, at Wake, isn't it? At NC State?
At NC State as well, yep.
Is it at Duke too? Where's Duke?
At Duke is the week before Kentucky.
Yeah, so they got 3 trips to that Carolina area this season. I know Wake's in Winston-Salem, but it's close enough. You got to win probably 2 of those 3 to get to 7, I would think. You know, they're the one thing that's to their advantage, their crossover games are with Virginia and Duke. You know, they're not, those aren't the top 2 teams in the, they're not even in the top 3, are they? I don't know. What is it, Carolina, Miami? Who's the third best team in the Coastal?
Either Virginia Tech or okay. Pitt, probably, in my opinion.
Right. And Duke's probably, is Duke probably. Or Georgia Tech the worst?
Probably Duke.
So there, yeah. That's a win. I'm still going to go 6-6. After what happened last year, 4-7, I'd say 6-6 would be borderline acceptable.
Okay, so we mentioned the disappointing season, 4-7 last year, and obviously Scott Satterfield interviewed for the South Carolina job to the surprise of many. If they struggle again this season, could he be on the hot seat?
I don't think anything will happen this year, but I think it would be on the hot seat for the following year because, you know, the way the whole thing went down, he didn't handle it very well. I didn't understand the way he handled it. When it first came up, I remember calling it was Ralph Russo tweeted something about it, the AP writer, and a couple people mentioned it. And like, I thought, that's ridiculous. He's just been here 2 seasons and he's had success. And, you know, it depends on how you view the South Carolina job. I don't view it as being that much better than the Louisville job. It's different. It's a hard job. I mean, you're number two in the state to Clemson. They haven't had, you know, Spurrier had decent success there, but it wasn't like they're winning SEC East titles. It's, what is it, at best the third and probably the fourth or fifth best job in the SEC East?
Easy.
Right? I mean, it's not better than Georgia or Florida. And if Tennessee ever gets it going, it's not better than Tennessee. So remember calling Vince Tyree, the Louisville athletic director, and, you know, he said, no, he's not going to, we talked about it and I know what's going on and, you know, he's not going there. And okay. And then it kind of died down for a while. And then that report came out that he'd met with the South Carolina people in Bowling Green. And at that point, I remember when I called some people at Louisville, they didn't even want to call back, which I took to mean they were so angry they weren't sure what they were going to say. And then not long after that, he had to issue, or he did issue, depending on who you believe, that letter of apology that was emailed to all Louisville season ticket holders. When you factor that in with four assistant coaches left after last year, and two of them you could argue were kind of lateral moves. I mean, Ledford going to the NFL is different, but one guy went back to App State. You know, it just creates an atmosphere. When you lose, people analyze that kind of stuff and say, what's really going on?
Right.
And I think that if you have back-to-back losing years, this is a, you know, although Louisville is a basketball school, I think it's viewed that way, they've been hard on football coaches. I mean, Steve Cragthorpe was the coach before Bobby Petrino, and he was gone after 3 years. Ron Cooper was the coach after Howard Snellenberger, and he was gone after 3 years. So this is a fan base that expresses its opinion pretty quickly. And if you lose, he had back-to-back losing seasons, and they think you don't really want to be here, it's not going to be much fun, because you know if they don't do well, people are going to be yelling from the stands, go to South Carolina, we don't want you here anyway. I mean, that's what you hold yourself up to when you do something like that.
Yeah.
No, I get it. I see Louisville as at least at the ACC Atlantic as what maybe the third best job. I mean, Clemson and Florida State, because just because there's so much talent there, recruiting, then you can maybe areas. Talk Louisville. Yeah,
yeah. And you know, and the momentum they had they had Lamar Jackson here. I mean, they won the Heisman Trophy. They are still benefiting from Lamar Jackson being here, because whenever you see him in the NFL, it gets people. Lamar Jackson. Yeah, I remember when he was at Louisville. That's something that, you know, that should be to their advantage. And it's not just Lamar Jackson. They had Teddy Bridgewater. You know, they've had a lot of good quarterbacks here. Jeff Brohm played here. Brian Brohm played here. Dave Ragone, who's now the offensive coordinator of the Falcons and was Conference USA Player of the Year 3 years in a row. Chris Redman, who made it to the NFL with the Falcons and the Ravens. I mean, they've had a lot of good players who've come through here.
My first favorite player, Johnny U.
So, and Johnny U. Yeah, there you go.
So never forget Johnny Unitas, man.
There's a statue of him in the stadium.
Huh. Hey, as I said at the beginning, we're going to talk a little bit more than just sports here. So I'm going to totally take us off the track here and ask you about what your favorite foods are.
Wow, that's a great question. Where I live, there is a restaurant called Mojitos that has Cuban food and Spanish food, and that's my favorite place. They have a seafood paella that I could probably eat once a week. I'd be up to about 400 pounds, but it's really good stuff. So I'd say that's my favorite food of the moment.
Okay. So I was going to, you know, save you from having to say something about your favorite place, because you know that kind of stirs up passions among local people. But what I was going to do is ask you, when you're on the road, because you have been on the road a lot over the years, some of the places that maybe have stood out to you and places that you like to go when you go to an NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that's a great question. The one place that we always go, in Atlanta, is Mary Mac's Tea Room. You ever been there?
I have not.
Write that one down.
I will be.
Mary Mac's Tea Room. It's sort of a old school Southern cooking, a lot of fried food, really good vegetables and things. My longtime traveling sidekick, Joe Biddle of the Nashville paper, knew all the good restaurants in the South, and we always went there. And one time we were seated at a table next to Ted Danson and his wife, Mary Steenburgen. And I think it's an underrated place in Atlanta. It's about, 10 or 12 blocks southeast of the Marriott Marquis. So that's okay. On my list.
I know where that is.
Last time I was in Greensboro, I liked Lucky 32. Okay. We ate there. Really good restaurant that I've always enjoyed. In Nashville, I like Nashville Deli. Nashville Deli. Nice. Really, gotcha. Really good place. Trying to think. New Orleans, my favorite place, is not in the French Quarter. It's in a neighborhood. It's called Clancy's.
I've been to Clancy's. Excellent food.
Unbelievably
good food.
Yeah, it's great. If you can get a table at Clancy's, you get one. Different menu every night. A lot of locals go there. Clancy's is definitely on my list. Let's see. Indianapolis, St. Elmo Steakhouse is very good. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows that one. It's in downtown Indy, just a couple blocks from Lucas Oil Stadium. And here's one that is underrated, and I just stumbled into it when I was out. I like to walk in the morning. When I've been to Charlottesville, I like Bodo's.
Oh, yeah.
Been there?
Love their bagels.
I just stumbled into the place, and like then every time I went, one day I went, the line wasn't out the door. Then the next three or four times I've been there, if you don't get there early enough, you got to wait outside. But that's a really good place, Bodo's.
Next time you're in New Orleans, in the COVID kind of threw a monkey wrench into everybody's operations down there. But if look up Upper Line Restaurant.
Upper Line?
Yeah, the Upper Line.
There's another place that I like in New Orleans. It's just a lunch sandwich shop called Mother's.
Okay.
I think it might be on Poydras.
Okay.
Yeah. Fairly close to where the Hyatt. I don't even know if the Hyatt's there anymore because things changed after the hurricane.
Katrina really changed.
Whenever I was in New Orleans for SEC functions, a bunch of us would always go to Mother's for lunch. They had really good sandwiches.
Well, one thing you pointed out there was the French Quarter is really not the place to go to eat, to be honest with you.
No.
There's like maybe one or two places down there that are worth going to that you can say, I've been there.
Right.
But the rest of them are spread out in the neighborhoods. It's very unusual.
I'll really date myself. In the 90s, when Louisville was in the Metro Conference and Tulane was in the Metro Conference, there was a place called Moran's, M-O-R-A-N, apostrophe S, Riverside, which was really good food, and it wasn't a tourist place. And what made it even better was that Pistol Pete Maravich's brother ran the place.
Gotcha.
And so Denny Crum would often go there, and a lot of times some of writers would go there the night before a game just to talk hoops with Pistol Pete Maravich's brother.
Yeah, nice. Good place to hang, no doubt. Hey, Rick. Thank you so much for joining us, talking to us about a little bit of everything, and I hope people will flip on DRB and catch you. Listen to the podcast. It's at WDRB.com, and there's a lot of places, obviously, as Will pointed out at the front end, that they can catch you on radio and a lot of other things as well, so... thank you, sir. We really appreciate you coming on and talking about, like I said, a little bit of everything.
I appreciate you having me on. I've had a very blessed and fortunate career, and what's really made it interesting, you know, in the last 6 or 7 years was Louisville joining the ACC and getting to see a bunch of schools that really I'd never covered games at before and towns I'd never gone to before, and it's been a tremendous amount of fun.
Want more ACC sports news and interviews? Make accnation.net your homepage or follow us on Google News. Be sure to subscribe to ACC Nation on your favorite podcast or streaming radio platform. While you're there, we'd appreciate a rating and your support through PayPal. Follow us on social media at ACC Nation. And you'll find Will on Twitter at WillsWorldMN, and I'm at ACCTheQ. Until next time, cheers.
Score.